Welcome to Good Muslim, Bad Muslim.
It's been, what, nothing's going on with Muslims, right?
I don't think that's right. we're constantly in the news.
Which is why we have jobs.
Which is why we have jobs that don't pay very well, doing this free podcast for all of you.
Don't tell people at a college who are just graduating that you can have jobs that don't pay.
Hey, speaking of college, where are we right now?
Hey, Pomona, give it up.
We are at Pomona College in Southern California, and we have a live audience for this episode of Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, and we're very excited. We're kind of nervous. I'm kind of nervous. You're probably not nervous.
No, I feel really at ease and very confident.
I'm a little nervous, so I'm just going to go with that. We have some very interesting things that we want to talk about.
Almost getting arrested in Iran.
Yeah, fatwas.
We have to issue fatwas.
Yep.
We have an awkward Muslim award to give out.
And then an awkward Ask a Muslim.
If it was awkward Ask a Muslim, I would win. and we have dating homeless men.
Non-dating. We'll get to that story. But before we get, usually we have this format where we talk about stuff that's going on in the news. But before we jump into that, since it sounds like none of you have been hearing the podcast and you don't know who we are, maybe we should have a little bit of a Q&A between the two of us.
What's your name?
My name's Taz. What's your name?
My name is Zara.
What do you do?
I'm a feminist, Muslim, Iranian-American comedian.
Awesome.
Thank you. I exist. People think I don't. I don't know what that's about. I get people being like, you're a feminist, but you're Muslim, but you're American, and you're Iranian. Where is that?
So where does this come out for you? Like, where can people see you?
Yeah, I do shows. I have one-woman shows. I have a one-woman show called All Atheists Are Muslim. That actually I'll be performing at Dartmouth College.
Awesome. And you've been doing this for like a few years now.
It's been 3 years that I've been performing All Atheists Are Muslim. Mm-hmm. And I have a new show out called Hijab and Hammer Pants.
Awesome.
Which is about a time where I wanted to wear a hijab and my mom wanted me to wear hammer pants. Even though my mom wore hijab because she wanted me to fit in, which was funny because hammer pants were not in during Nirvana grunge. And that was an unfortunate experience. I think actually my day in school would have been better if I had worn the hijab. I would have been less outcast.
Awesome. I used to wear these really baggy pants all the time, and they were probably the same as yours. Hammer pants.
Aladdin pants.
I wanted to ask you where else, I mean, you have a column out too. You're a columnist.
I have a column called My Infidel Husband, which I, who's here with us? Give it up for my infidel husband.
Yay.
And I actually had to take it down for a little while that we'll talk about later. But it's back now.
It's back now. And
we also were in a book together, Love Inshallah. That's actually how we met.
So I'm Taz. I am a Politico storyteller and writer based in Southern California. I do a lot of civic engagement work down here, but I also do writing on the side. So I think for me, I really got started doing writing to, you know, tell the counter narrative of communities of color, particularly the South Asian and Asian American communities. And so I've really focused on telling these non-fictional essays and blogs about our community. So that's kind of my world of writing. So I'm not less theater, more writing.
You have a very popular column out.
I have a popular column called Radical Love, where I talk about the intersection of activism and being single and trying to find love and grief and a bunch of other stuff. But it's also on the Love Inshallah website, which is where we met, because you have a chapter and I have a chapter in the book.
Yeah, both of ours were like the sexy chapters.
Yeah. They definitely were. You just have to read the book to find out more.
You also do the voter engagement.
Yeah, I get out the vote in Southern California. So I've actually done a lot of work on this campus here. So I do a lot of youth voting stuff.
Ever since we became friends, I've become a better citizen.
That's good. Did you register to vote?
I've become a better citizen because I didn't know before and now I feel stupid, but like I didn't know how important it is to vote in your local elections. And that sounds really dumb to say, but I didn't know that. Like, do you guys vote in your local election? Okay, yeah, fine. All right. Yeah. They all nodded. Yeah. It's just me, the bad Muslim. And I learned so much from you.
That's good. But did you vote in this recent election?
I learned so much from you.
We're going to have a conversation offline about registering to vote. And for everyone listening, you can register online for the state of California. I think it's register.ca.gov. So I'm just going to register to vote.
That's the other thing that people don't know about you is that you're a phenomenal painter.
Thank you.
Who was featured in the Smithsonian Digital.
It's not up yet. I'm allegedly supposed to be in the Smithsonian Digital.
That's a hot place to be, allegedly in the Smithsonian.
But I did have my pieces in an art show recently called Rebel Legacy. So it was an art show put together of South Asian radical activists and artists.
Can you talk a little bit about your painting? Like, do you see yourself as more of a painter, more of a writer? Do you, you know, I'm sure you get asked this all of the time because you wear so many hats.
Yeah, I see myself more as a writer than a painter. I think I paint when I'm not able to write because I feel like writing is so much about expressing yourself. And then I feel like there are times where I just get super blocked and I'm like the words get cut in my throat. So that's when I write. That's when I paint. And I mean, you know this, like I started painting a lot after my mother passed away. And so that was because I was unable to put words to paper. So I find painting really cathartic.
And your paintings aren't just any paintings. Like you see your paintings as very political.
Now I do. I've been trying to figure out how to do political art. Because I think there's something about doing voter engagement work, and then people just don't get excited about politics. But then if you are able to do culture shifting through talking about politics through art and through culture, you can really change how people feel empathetic and feel, like actually feel about the issues at hand.
That's one of the powerful things I always notice about your paintings is when you look at them, you know where you stand and they speak volumes immediately. You
Thank
know,
you.
Yeah, you have the painting of the Bangladesh buildings.
Yeah. So for people who don't know, another project that I do is I do a lot of music stuff. So I have a music blog called Mishti Music. And after the Rana Plaza collapse that happened about 2 years ago in Bangladesh, there was about close to 1,300 people died in that building collapse. And after that, me and my friend Brooklyn Shanti, we co-executive produced an album called Beats for Bangladesh, where we got South Asian musicians to donate tracks. And we were able to raise thousands of dollars for the victims of Rana Plaza. Because one of the things that happened when the building collapsed was it's mostly women that are working in these industries. And there are all these kids that were orphans after that. So,
oh, wow.
So we had to do something. And then one of the great things about doing this podcast and being able to make media in this time and age is that we released it all on Bandcamp. We didn't print up any, we didn't press any digital, like hard CDs. But we were able to do this wonderful art project and raise money just through the media that we have at hand, which is awesome, I think. I think this is something we couldn't have done 10 years ago.
You have this incredible relationship with Muse, where I'm excited that we're doing introductions again, because I always have wanted to ask you, how do you get the impetus to paint something or to write something? You know, like, how do you know that you're like, oh, this is something that I need visually to put together versus in words?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Interesting asker.
I don't really, like, so I think my muse for writing is different. I think we've been having this conversation because you have this column out now.
Right.
I think what happens, it's turned into a pattern. So my column's been out maybe for 16 columns, I believe. So it's been out for over a year. So I usually spend the last 2 weeks of every month, because my column's out the first Wednesday of every month. So I spend like a week just kind of like thinking about what's going on in life. It's a little bit, and then for painting, I just kind of like, if I'm feeling something, then I just paint. But I haven't been painting recently because
if you're feeling something, you just paint. If you've ever seen, your sister's here. She can vouch for me on this. If you've seen one of Taz's paintings, hearing her be like, I feel something and then I paint it is like, oh, and that's how Monet did it. Okay.
Basically.
Yeah. I'm glad that there's no transparency there. Don't give away your method.
I won't.
So that segues really well into our next segment. We were going to talk about the consequences of talking
about sex.
Dun, 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 dun.
Well, so one of the cool things about this panel, or what
the panel with the two of us?
The two of us. The poster said, Feminism and Islam, Faces, Voices, and Dissent. And the two of us were like, oh my gosh, that sounds so amazing. Who's going to be speaking at this
thing? Those two women must be so cool.
They were like, oh crap, we are.
We're leading that.
We have to figure this out.
I'm really curious. So Faces, here they are. Right? What a sight. And Voices, great. We sound hot.
Okay.
And there's somebody out there listening to this that's like, oh, do women always have to be sexual? And Dissent is the one where I was like, talk to Taz.
I don't think that's fair, though. I think your comedy is very dissentful. Is that a word? Revolutionary? I think there's something to be said
revolutionary.
About, I think you said it last night.
If the FBI is listening, all of this is a joke.
Maybe.
That's the dissent piece.
That's the dissent piece. But I think
we talked about this last night a little bit.
But I think Dissent came up in what happened. You were supposed to go give a talk.
I was supposed to go give a talk. I got invited to do a speech in Iran, and then I got uninvited.
You got uninvited. It was a very stressful 2-month process for you.
Yeah, and, you know, I still struggle with, like, who to be angry at about this, because, of course, it's not, like, just going to Pomona to give a speech, you know, and then something happens and, unfortunately, it doesn't work out, or it does work out. It's Iran. It's far. We're in California. And I hadn't been to Iran in 20 years. All of my family lives in Iran. My aunts, uncles, grandparents, my cousins. The first time I went to Iran was the first time I saw them when I was like 14 years old. And I remember I kept calling my aunt Mrs. And she was like, I'm your aunt. And I was like, whatever, stranger. And, you know, it meant a lot to me because I was 14. It's that awkward age. And they unconditionally loved me. And I had never met them before.
Yeah.
And they just were like, oh my God. You know, everything I said was like, we love you and everything you do. And I'm a narcissist, so that's important. And then I was really excited to hear that I could go because I always wondered because we did Love Inshallah together. And in my piece, something that I do that I was very intentioned about doing is saying that I have premarital sex. And a lot of I don't know if I can say a lot. All? a lot of Muslim female artists don't talk about sex. Or if we do, when we do talk about sex, we sort of discuss around it. You know, like we dated. We were friends. And there's like innuendo.
And we got married.
And then we got married and everything was fine. I had sex with him, but then I married him, you know. And I wanted to be able to say I had sex with other men who were not my husband. And that went in the New York Times. And then that didn't make it so that I couldn't go to the country. They were like, come here. Come closer. And then I found out that not through the organizers. I ended up finding out through other sources that if I went, I could be abducted by cultural groups in Iran who did not approve at all of what I was doing, and that in fact they had lost some sponsorships as a result of the risque nature of my work.
And I think you were saying that the source that you have said that other people who went to Iran like you disappeared.
Yeah, and I'm still looking into that. Like, anybody who wants to fact check on my behalf, contact me. I don't like doing that work. I like making stuff up and calling it truth. that's what I found out, and that was terrifying. You know, this person went and looked up other women who were similar to me in the things that they had said, and they were unaccounted for. They couldn't find them.
Which is so frightening. I think
it's terrifying.
One of the things that I thought was really fascinating about this story is that, you know, even though you're an American over in Iran, you're considered an Iranian. And so if this were to happen to you and you just disappeared,
nothing that we could do.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing that we could do.
So how did all this make you feel?
scared.
Yeah.
I also felt really grateful that we found out when we did. I was grateful that I was uninvited. I appreciated that. You know, I couldn't imagine just going with my parents, and then I had all these like really freaky fantasies of like being taken away and my dad seeing that and Duncan seeing that and just, you know, a whirlwind of looking into the future, imagining what could have happened and feeling the PTSD of it. And I sort of had to calm myself down and remember it didn't happen and I'm not there. And we found out in time and we're going to Italy instead.
So how do you feel as an artist? Like, do you think you're going to hold back on how you create art now that this you've gone through this experience? Or does it make you want to, like, go all
full
out?
Full throttle.
I was going to say balls to the wall, but then I was like, wait, that's not very feminist.
Balls to the wall. If I had balls, they'd be really big. I just want to put that out there. I just want to say that. Every time I've been asked that question has been when other things have come up in the news, you know, the Je Suis Charlie, are you going to change how you make jokes? You know, no, of course not. This is the first time where I feel like I have to be really careful.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, California became the world. You know, like my sense of local domestic policy became foreign policy all of a sudden. And, you know, I'll be honest. At first, I was really angry at Muslims.
Yeah.
I was. I was like, dude, Muslims. And then I was like, whoa, wait, that's my job. I'm supposed to be on the other end of that. And I thought I could have gone the route of being really angry about this and being like, oh, it's true. You can't joke about anything. And they do take it all very seriously. And then I was like, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard because it's geopolitics.
Yeah.
I'm entering into a political sphere that, you know, has nothing to do with me and that I also can't have an ego to be like, and I'm going to say whatever I want and change this, you know, is not the case. And there are repercussions. And you do have to be careful. Mm-hmm. And I also remember that even though this thing is happening right now and feels really present, it's not like talking about sex hasn't gotten me in trouble in the past.
Yeah.
Here, at home, you know, like in the workplace. And I'm actually curious for you too, like if you ever get questions, because the most I've ever had to deal with any kind of assault as a result of my openness about sex in my work was, you know, in the workplace by a white dude who just was like, well, I should be able to talk to you about this because you talk about it on the radio. So why can't I talk to you about this right now? And
which is super patriarchal
and sexual harassment.
Yeah.
Both of those things together. And then even when he apologized, because a friend heard it and said, you know, dude, you need to apologize. And even when he apologized, he was angry at me and was like, I don't know why I have to apologize, but I am, you know, because, like, it's weird. You talk about it on the radio, and then all of a sudden I'm not supposed to talk about it when I see you.
Yeah. When you were telling me the story last night, it reminded me of that, the thing, there's this girl on OkCupid. You probably have been, some of you, if you're on Tumblr, you probably follow this, so I'm sure you're all college kids, so you're all on Tumblr. So it's as she was saying, whenever a guy would compliment her on OkCupid, she would respond and say something like, thank you. And then the whoever the guy was would say, like, how dare you have this ego and say that? And it reminds me of that just juxtaposition as far as, like, who has power and how that people don't like that. Men don't like that.
When they lose power.
Particular men. Don't like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to mention was, like, we were talking about, so my most recent article was called Is My Ex an FBI Informant?
Yes. I'm so glad we're talking about this right now.
And so the reason why this came up was because there is this recent case down at down in Irvine, where there was an FBI informant that was entering into the mosque scene in Orange County, and he was like a terrible FBI informant. because he was so terrible that the Muslims in the community reported him to the FBI, and the FBI was like, no, it's cool, it's whatever.
This is a true story.
Do you realize how terrible? Anyways, This American Life did this whole hour-long episode. You can go listen to that. But it came up in the news recently because this informant, I think his name's Craig Montiel.
His name's Craig?
Yeah.
And he was a FBI informant pretending to be Muslim?
His Muslim name was Farouk. He had a convert name, right? Because the FBI informants usually...
My name is Farouk, or Craig.
So it came up in Huffington Post recently because he did an interview where he said the FBI told him that he was encouraged to have sexual relations with Muslim women to get intel from the community. That just blew my mind because I was like, that shit is so fucked up.
That is straight out of the Americans.
Because here you are in your situation, you're talking about how sex was used as a tool for you to show that you're a bad Muslim. But here in this other community, the FBI is using sex as a tool to get into the Muslim community, right? So it's just like how...
How can you be a good Muslim anywhere ever?
Ever, right. So totally go. This is my plug. Go read my article. It's on loveinshallah.com/radical-love something or another, but it's there.
Well, okay, but I do want to know, like, how do you know if you are with someone who's an FBI informant? What do you look
for? Well, so I did this whole Venn diagram thing. So one of the things that I say is that, you know, if... Usually, like, you know, be a little suspect of the convert Muslims, you know, or Muslims.
Convert Muslims.
Or Muslims.
Oh,
or anyone who shows interest in Muslim Islam.
We're going to get so many emails.
So, but then that's like all of them, right? Like Muslim, convert to Islam, or interested in Islam.
I just converted Duncan.
There. So I would be suspect of him.
I actually just earlier converted everyone in this room.
Yeah, that's true.
With my show. We all believe in gravity and we're Muslim.
The ridiculous thing is, like, you can never tell with the way the FBI informants are set up. Like, you just never know.
You know what?
I'm
going to ask an even more meta question.
Okay.
How do you know if you're an FBI informant?
I don't know. People have been asking me that on Twitter. I know I'm not.
People asked you that on Twitter? Yeah. They were like, Tess, are you sure you're not an FBI informant?
Yeah, after the article came out, I was like,
wire.
I don't think so. I know I'm not because I'm not getting paid thousands and thousands of dollars because these people make bank. He was making like $9,000 a month or something stupid. I was like, what?
How do you become an FBI informant?
Anyways.
I'm just joking, but I'd like to apply.
Anyways.
I'm just joking, but if anyone wants to contact me via Twitter, I'm available.
So,
$9,000 a month?
Yeah, it's a lot.
Hi, everyone.
So, on that note, I'm going to segue into...
That actually segues perfectly into the awkward Ask a Muslim section.
So, just to give a little background, I feel like as Muslims, you get asked a lot of really weird questions.
Yes.
So...
Like, can I just step in with that and give an example of weird questions?
Yeah.
Oh, you're a Muslim? Do you also believe in child brides? That's a question I've gotten. Oh, you're a Muslim? Will you be okay with your husband having four other wives? Like, that's a question I got at the grocery store, which seemed like the topical environment.
So what did you get last night? You had an awkward Ask a Muslim last night.
I did. Okay, so I went to go get my eyebrows threaded, because that's what you do.
For a podcast.
For a podcast. I just keeled over laughing. You can't tell. Because you can't see me. But my eyebrows look hot. I've got arches. Everything I wanted. And the woman who was threading my eyebrows, like, I think from my name, she knew that I was Muslim, and she was Stacy. And she heard me talking on the phone with you, and we were like, where are we going to go eat? What ethnicity do you want to eat? That's how we solve racism, is by eating other ethnicities. And that connects back to an earlier joke that podcast listeners won't understand. She's threading my brows, and she's like, oh, you guys shouldn't go to Korean barbecue. It's all pork. You won't be able to eat anything. And I had an awkward Muslim moment, because I eat pork. But I didn't want to tell her that. Because she was pulling out my eyebrow hairs. And it seemed like a sensitive place. Like, I didn't know if I was going to get, like, you know, like, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, like, threaded into my eyebrows. It was an awkward moment.
It was an awkward moment. Okay, so my awkward Eskimo...
Yeah, what's your awkward moment?
My awkward Eskimo slim happened when I was walking to the Starbucks on my way to my office, and this guy with dreadlocks and a bicycle and, like, his shirt...
Bicycle?
Bicycle.
I just want to highlight that you said that right now. Keep going.
With his shirt, like, half open, like, comes up to me and starts, like, trying to talk to me. I was like, is he hitting on me? I don't understand what's going on. He's like, oh, salam alaikum. I was like, welcome, salam. He's like, I see your necklace. And I have this Allah necklace that I always wear. And I was like, oh, you know, like, welcome, salam. Are you Muslim?
It's a very pretty necklace.
And he was like, yeah, I prayed this morning, blah, blah, blah. And he was like,
He said, yeah, I prayed this morning.
Yeah, yeah. He was like really, like, into this. And I was like, this is weird. And he's like, so you're going to Starbucks. Can you get me a drink? And he's like, can you get me one of those, like veggie drinks, because I'm trying to be healthy. I was just like, he's like, I know they're really expensive, but, you know, whatever you can afford. Then I was like, oh my gosh, this is a homeless guy, like, trying to, like, get me to buy him, like, a healthy $7 Starbucks juice. I was like, what? And I was like, should I? And I was like, he's Muslim. He said, salams. I'm supposed to. You're supposed to. And I, like, come out, and then I, like, give him the drink.
You bought it for him.
Yeah. And he's like, he opens up his shirt, and, like, he's, like, showing me some, like, Allah necklace, but then he's like really cut, and he's like, you know, he has, like, a six pack. I was just so confused by this whole situation. I was like, I was like, I gotta go to a meeting. He's like, I got your drink next time. Then I was like, I'm so confused by this. What is happening?
What? I got your drink next time?
Yeah, he was like, he offered to buy me a drink next time, you know.
I like how he was, like, so cut because he was starving. He's like, I'm homeless. That's why I look hot right now. Oh, I just killed the vibe.
Yeah, you did.
That's why you're the good Muslim.
Yeah, I bought him the drink.
You bought him the drink.
Because he said salams, but I wasn't sure because maybe he was hitting on me too. I don't know what was happening in this situation.
Probably all of the above.
All of the above. So that was my awkward Eskimo Muslim. So for folks who haven't been listening to our podcast, basically every podcast there's been some weird hit-on story. So I just wanted to keep that going with this one.
You have, like, the weirdest men in your life.
I do.
Like, for those of you guys who are following Taz's articles, you will know that she has had a pap smear from a telenovela star.
Yeah, he was my hot doctor who, after two years of being my hot doctor, I realized was a telenovela star. You should just read the article.
Take that in. And your other ex could have been an FBI informant.
Which was this recent one. So, don't judge me by the men in my lives.
I didn't need to. Somebody just did in the audience.
Don't judge me.
I just heard it.
Don't judge me. Just, you know, as you grow older, you'll see. You'll see.
Oh, she did the point.
You'll see.
She did the point. So, I feel like you deserve the Good Muslim Award.
Thanks. We do have a Good Muslim Award to give out, though. We like to give out Good Muslim Awards. And we want to give the Good Muslim Award. So I don't know for folks who have been following the case in Chicago. So there was a case where this woman was sexually molested by her imam, and she talked about it. And then apparently four other women came out and talked about it too. So he was recently arrested, and you read a little bit more about it than I did.
Good Muslim Award for being brave enough to come forward, talk about that in a community that didn't want them to. It was really difficult for them to. I read the New York Times article where they came up against so much resistance, and it just keeps coming up for me as a theme. I mean, especially even as a comedian, we say, like, oh, it's so hack as a female comic to make sex jokes, and it's just for shock value, and the Margaret Cho era is over where we need to do that. And it's not true. It's not true. And, Good Muslim Award for coming forth.
And I think what was really amazing about this story particularly is that our community is really conservative. So in that same article and in
my community is, like, is more into, like, disco. The majority of the Persians that I know are not Muslim or secular.
Let's say, but if a case like this happened where someone was sexually molesting someone or raping someone, like how would people in the community?
No, that's, I mean, I think across the board, it's true that even then, like I can imagine if it happened to me, I can imagine my parents wanting me to not talk to everybody about it just because of not wanting me to experience that either pitiful or shaming look coming my way.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's just terrible. That's so terrible. So this guy now is like 75 years old, right? And like people in the
out on bail,
only $250,000 bail. And people in the Chicago Muslim community, that's been a very like hot topic there. It's been very, very like abrasive.
Yeah.
And
I think that's why we, like, it's obvious the Good Muslim Award goes here, because part of, I think, what it means to be a good Muslim is to challenge your community.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So big ups to this woman who's 23 and anonymous and, like, being brave enough to go in the media and talking about what happened to her.
That inspired other women to come forward.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
So who do we want a fatwa? We have that power.
For folks who don't know, we definitely...
we have that power. I'm giving, like, evil looks that are powerful.
So I have a fatwa I want to give to spiders, because...
Please elaborate.
So at my parents' house, I was there this past weekend, and there were, like... We had three spider incidences, and one was a spider came out of the loofah in the bath. It was a black loofah, so you can't see a spider coming out of it. It was out of arachnophobia. Okay, that was one spider. Then my sister, she saw a spider on the back of her toilet. She comes running out of the bathroom. It was like the size of a quarter. Ugh. She comes running out of the bathroom and says, like, there's a spider on the back of my toilet. Okay, so that was incident two.
Wait, you ran out of the toilet? I'm looking at her sister right now.
Yeah, she ran out of the bathroom.
you ran out of the, like, were your pants down still?
No.
You're just, like, running, like, there's a spider behind me.
Basically.
Like, peeing as you go. I wanted the visual. I can move on now.
So, and then there was a daddy long leg, which, I mean, there's a lot of spiders. And the fourth one happened last night when you two were staying over at my place. Luckily, your white man was in the house, because I live by myself, so
spiders,
I don't have a white man in the house. So he...
Okay. Duncan is also terrified of spiders.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We just were like, you are a man with testicles.
Prove it.
Feminism doesn't exist in this house. Be a
around
man.
Around spiders.
Around spiders. When it comes to spiders, we just really like second-class citizenship.
So I want to do a fatwa against spiders. But, I mean, we were talking in the car about, like...
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. I think spiders harass women constantly.
Yeah.
And also, it is like the butt of so many male comics jokes to be like, oh, women can wax their legs, but the second they see a spider, they're like, oh my God. Spiders have 8 million eyes. They have 6 legs. And they have an exoskeleton.
Yeah.
I feel like that deserves fear.
Okay. Yeah. So fatwa
and
against...
And a fatwa.
Fatwa against the spiders.
Fatwa against all spiders. If you kill a spider today... you will get extra heaven points. We're going to get so many emails.
Yeah.
From, like, spider lovers.
Yeah, no one listens to our podcast. No. We're just imagining those emails. Well, speaking of, we're at the end of our podcast. We're 30 minutes in. So if you do have questions, comments, or anything about our podcast, please, social media, use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Go to our website, GoodMuslimBadMuslim.com. We have an info thing where you can, like, enter in your questions or comments. Do you have anything you want to plug right now?
If you're a homeless man, Taz is giving out smoothies from Starbucks. Just subscribe and point out her Allah necklace.
Oh, Lord. I don't have anything. I mean, just I have my column, so just be sure to check out the column. It's
We both have a column out, Radical Love and My Infidel Husband. And, I also have the show coming up at Dartmouth, so just everyone go on to the East Coast.
Yeah.
We'll see you there. And a big thank you to... Oh, we should mention before we close, we're having a Q&A after this, so if you're listening, you may want to tune in. And like a huge thank you to Bishui and a big thank you to Pomona.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar, that's TAZZYSTAR, and Zara at Zara Nu, that's ZAHRANOO. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarah-Smith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim.
He opens up his shirt and like he's like showing me some like Allah necklace, but then he's like really cut and he's like, you know, he has like a six pack.